the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's popularity has waned, but opinion polls show most Americans want occupation forces out of Afghanistan, even if terrorist groups rebound. We now present you an article written jointly by Ed Pilkington and Joanne E. Grieve. The piece is titled, Pentagon Warns of Further Attacks as Biden Condemned Over Afghan Pullout. Biden's national security team has warned him that U.S. troops remain under threat of another terrorist attack just 24 hours after a devastating suicide bomb at Kabul airport that killed 13 U.S. service members and at least 90 Afghans. As U.S. troops brace themselves for a possible further terrorist attack, the U.S. president was facing mounting bipartisan criticism over his handling of the mass evacuation from Afghanistan. The recriminations following the deadliest day for the U.S. military in a decade came not only from familiar Republican antagonists, but also from prominent members of his own party. U.S. military forces are racing against the clock to meet Tuesday's deadline, Tuesday, 31st of August, to complete the withdrawal from Afghanistan and bring to an end almost 20 years of the so-called Forever War. But security risks continue to cause alarm. In a briefing on Friday, 27th of August, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki painted a grim picture of the challenge still facing U.S. forces in the final hours of U.S. presence in Afghanistan. Jen Psaki said the National Security Team had advised President Biden that another terror attack at Kabul airport is likely. She added, "The threat is ongoing and it is active. Our troops are still in danger. This is the most dangerous part of the mission." A warning was echoed by an earlier statement from the Pentagon, warning of specific credible threats of further attacks. Discussions were ongoing with Taliban leaders who controlled the area surrounding the airport in an effort to block off roads and fend off any attacks involving vehicles. Asked by Fox News Channel whether President Biden intended to kill Daesh-affiliated terrorists who perpetrated last Thursday's attack, or bring them to trial, Jen Psaki claimed, "I think he made clear yesterday that he does not want them to live on the earth anymore." The U.S. president is sticking doggedly to his plan to be out of the war-ravaged country by 31st of August. He has vowed to evacuate as many Americans and U.S. support personnel as possible, as well as hunt down the perpetrators of last Thursday's suicide bombing and make them pay. But Biden is being buffeted by a groundswell of condemnation about the dark turn that has befallen the U.S. mission in its final days. Leon Panetta, the former War Secretary and CIA Director under Barack Obama, told CNN that it was Joe Biden's worst nightmare to lose 13 U.S. service members as a result of what's happened in Afghanistan. This has got to be the worst day in his administration. Leon Panetta predicted that the U.S. would have to go back into Afghanistan to take out Daesh terrorists who claimed responsibility for the suicide bombing. He said, "I understand that we're trying to get our troops out of there, but the bottom line is we can leave a battlefield, but we can't leave the war on terrorism." During a White House meeting with the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett on Friday, 27th of August, Joe Biden called the death of 13 U.S. service members tragic. He said of the U.S. Marines and Navy SEALs present in Kabul that the mission they perform is dangerous and has now come with significant loss of personnel, but it's a worthy mission. Biden did not respond to Leon Panetta's warning that the U.S. might be sucked back into Afghanistan to pursue the orchestrators of the bombing. The White House has pointed to the U.S. military's so-called over-the-horizon capacity, meaning its ability to hit targets from bases outside of Afghanistan, though no detail has been given of how the Biden administration plans to go after Daesh terrorists without troops on the ground. Despite the ongoing security risk, evacuation flights from Kabul continued at a frantic pace. Major General Hank Taylor, the Joint Staff Deputy Director for Regional Operations, said on Friday, 27th of August, that between U.S. and coalition forces, there had been 89 flights out in the previous 24 hours, carrying 12,500 people to safety. They included more than 300 American citizens, which brings the total of U.S. nationals thought to be still in the country to about 700. Approximately 111,000 people have been evacuated since July in what the White House is describing as probably the largest airlift in U.S. history. With the U.S. war in Afghanistan entering its last hours, President Biden is engaged in a high-stakes political gamble. Getting out of Afghanistan, America's longest war, continues to be overwhelmingly popular among U.S. voters, despite the unraveling scenes at Kabul Airport. A new morning consult Politico opinion poll suggested that the American people want out, even where withdrawal to lead to a resurgence of terrorism groups based in Afghanistan. On the other hand, the harrowing images beamed back to American television screens over the past few days have sharply hit Biden's domestic approval rating, which has plummeted from above 50% to just 41%. The impact of the death of 13 U.S. service members, the largest U.S. military toll on a single day since 2011, has yet to be reflected in the opinion surveys. Leading Republicans sought to capitalize on the president's political distress. Former U.S. President Donald Trump appeared on Sean Hannity's Fox News show just hours after the bombing in Kabul to decry his successor's handling of the crisis as the dumbest move anybody's ever made, perhaps in the history of our country. Donald Trump was not asked to explain how he would have done things differently, given that he was responsible for the original withdrawal deal after more than a year of talks with the Taliban in Doha, Qatar. Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, also questioned Joe Biden's handling of the evacuation, saying there would be a day of reckoning over it. Asked whether he agreed with those Republicans calling for the president's resignation, he replied, "Look, I'm extremely frustrated with this president. If you want to be a president of the free world, you have to have the faith, the trust, and the confidence of the American public. President Biden lost that yesterday." Amid the ongoing tension at Kabul Airport, the precise number of Americans still in Afghanistan remains unclear. The U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, has said that a third of those in the country have given no indication that they want to leave, which potentially shrinks the number of U.S. citizens still waiting to leave to about 400. In the White House briefing, Jen Psaki said the diplomatic engagement with the Taliban would continue even after the 31st of August deadline in order to ensure the safe departure of American citizens and their partners who are unable to leave before that deadline. She said that such links were a necessity given the reality of Taliban control of the country, though she stressed, "We don't trust the Taliban. This is not about trust." The Pentagon said on Friday, 27th of August, that they have been attempting to expand the perimeter fence around Kabul Airport to increase protections for the 5,000 U.S. troops still based there. U.S. military commanders have also been seeking to persuade the Taliban, who are in control of the area surrounding the Kabul airport, to block off key roads in order to reduce the risk of vehicles packed with explosives approaching the gates of the airport.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Dear brothers and sisters, you're listening to The Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. In this special episode, we select a short part of Imam Khomeini's will. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, said, I leave two great and precious things among you, the Book of Allah and my household. It should be noted that the tradition of Thaghalain has been reported from the Prophet successively and by many sides among all Muslims and in the books of the Sunnah, including the six reliable collections, using various phraseology and on different occasions. This noble tradition is an unequivocal evidence for humanity as a whole, particularly Muslims of all schools of thought. All Muslims for whom this evidence apply are accountable, and if there be an excuse for the ignorant people, there will be none for the scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Ayman Rizvi. In the last episode, we were talking about one of the speeches of Imam Khomeini, which was delivered to the scholars of Qom. One important point I like to present and I like to extract from his speech that Westerners and some non-Muslims, or sometimes some Muslims, says that we are a people of mourning and we are a people of crying all the time, especially in the months of Muharram and Safar, because this is exactly what we do for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. for his trials and tribulations which he suffered in the fields of Karbala. But we also must remember, he says, that every Imam of ours has a different strategy in his lifetime to fight the oppression or to fight the oppressors of his time.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
For example, Imam Hussein alayhi salam has paid sacrifices of his own life and his family and his friends. But right after him, we see that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, he was also in the Karbala, but after the event of Karbala, he gave us the penetrating and incisive prayers in which he mentioned all the great messages of fighting against oppression, even though they were prayers, simple prayers that, you know, one can recite after Salat or things like that. But these prayers has all those messages. So he actually changed the strategy according and during his times. So he has a different socio-political order, so he used the way of prayers. And if we look at the life of every single Ma'asum, every single member of the 14 Ma'asumin, we would find out that each and every individual found a distinct way of preaching according to his own socio-political orders. So this is one of the great messages we can learn from this speech of Imam Khomeini. Inshallah, till the next episode, fi amanillah.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and here is another thought-provoking maxim from immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, the younger grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He who tries to achieve something by being disobedient to Allah will not achieve what he expects and will fall into what he fears.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. The zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
A bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Goliot says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Colliot says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a spiraling city.
The youngest panda at the U.S. is Smith's Dorian Zoo National Zoo, that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is a fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
for Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made his first public appearance 2 weeks after his birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Bornean orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea, while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
A Slovenian enthusiast has discovered a new cave in the Alpine country, which is staggering visitors by its awe-inspiring looks. Ludwig Husu, a 63-year-old cave explorer, has come across a cavern that runs 60 meters deep in the ground. It's located in the country's karst region, an area of land made up of limestone. Some 14,000 caves are buried under the green forest of Slovenia, hiding away breathtaking stalactite and stalagmite formations. The limestone region is so pristine and uncharted that the European Space Agency has used the caves to train astronauts.
Yeah, astronauts.
Astronauts also know that the karst world is exceptional, special, in a similar way to how a space environment can be. It is an unknown environment where you do not know what to expect at your next step. They have been here to train for precisely that, how to help yourself in a dark area where you're not sure what's going on and everything is new. That's very good training for space, and they have been very pleased to be able to prepare for something they might find in space.
Over 150 species, some looking like alien creatures, have been discovered inside the cave systems. They include an ancient aquatic salamander called the little dragon that can live up to 100 years. The animal was previously considered living proof that dragons had once existed. Some cave systems in Slovenia stretch for tens of kilometers. They are so winding and deep that scientists say large parts of them remain undiscovered despite exploration efforts dating back hundreds of years. As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in the country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device.
We don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except there are scanned references in archaeology books. Now scientists have discovered that the giant mammals could walk incredibly long distance. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground in its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
Prehistoric cave paintings found in Spain prove that Neanderthals were the first artists on Earth. A new study says red markings discovered in three caves near Malaga did not occur naturally. They were made by Neanderthals nearly 65,000 years ago. That's when modern humans did not inhabit the continent yet. The findings suggest that the pigments were applied at different times, sometimes more than 10,000 years apart. This shows that Neanderthals returned to the site over time to make symbolic markings.
I believe that this art made by the Neanderthals will be also found in other caves around the world. This time figurative art, which we have not paid attention to, may be precisely the oldest art in the world. So this place in Spain is one of the caves with the oldest art in the world.
Researchers say the pigments are yet another evidence that the intellectual capabilities of Neanderthals have been underestimated. Neanderthals went extinct about 40,000 years ago.
Children saying is the light of guidance and the ship of salvation.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, Salamu Alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio from Iran. This is today's special and the topic is A Message to Save the World. But first, we'll look at the calendar. Today, Saturday, is the 19th of Muharram, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 6th of Shahrivar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 28th of August, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's bless this moment of our today's special by recitation of chapter Nuh, verses 21 to 22.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. قال نوح الرب إنهم عصوني واتبعوا من لم يزده ماله وولده إلا خسارا.
Noah said, My Lord, indeed they have disobeyed me and followed him whose wealth and children will not increase him except in loss.
ومكروا مكرا كبارا.
And they conspired an immense conspiracy.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Having made his utmost efforts to hundreds of years, Noah noticed that his people, except for a few, persisted in polytheism, idolatry, error, and corruption. Thus he despaired of providing them with guidance and turned toward divine threshold, invoking God Almighty to chastise them. Taking a glance at the history of mankind, we witness that many a leader of different peoples were like them, whose sole privileges rested in amassing unlawful possessions and fathering unworthy offspring, and left no stone unturned to disobey Allah the Almighty and His messengers, peace be upon them all, and to impose their false beliefs upon the deprived, who led their lives in bondage.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio.
People rise up and mourn. It is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein.
This is today's special and a message to save the world. Putting his life in danger, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, raised a potent cry of dissent against the establishment and introduced a particular form of non-violent resistance. Even today, his methodology of showing dissent is still prevalent in many civilized societies in one way or the other. He, along with his family and other comrades, offered this supreme sacrifice for the upliftment of truth and made a clear distinction between the truth and falsehood. Apparently, he lost the battle but eternalized himself by standing for the divine precepts of Sharia. His example still warms up the hearts of men with the determination to work for justice.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bihi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the main messages of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam for the whole world. Among the historic incidents in the world, we find that the episode of Ashura and the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has remained one of the most conspicuous and long-lasting events in the whole world, such that with the passage of over 1400 years, we find that every day the news of commemoration of Imam al-Hussein's mournings and the Ashura ceremonies reverberates in the whole world day by day, and it never ceases, it never fades away. In this regard, we find that the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was initiated around 2 years before the death of Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. However, the actual field of the actual battle of Karbala took place just 1 day on the day of Ashura, 10th of Muharram in the year 61, according to Hijra calendar. However, we find that this great and historic movement that has proved it to be one of the most conspicuous events in the whole world has addressed many people, both Muslim and non-Muslim in the world, such that a great majority of those people who've been able to express themselves in one way or another, I mean, both as men of letters or, politicians or scholars and so on, they expressed themselves and interpreted the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam from one way or another.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels cry, where little children die. Hussein said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry out, Hussein.
Muharram, a continuous mission against injustice. Imam al-Hussein, forever, demarcated the truth from falsehood. Before heading to Karbala for a decisive battle against Umayyad tyrant Yazid ibn Muawiyah, Imam al-Hussein said, "Surely the main of my stand is not inspired by vain exaltation, and it is also not for the quest of kingdom. Neither is it to cause dissension and corruption, nor is it to wrong anybody unjustly." These words of Imam are enough in themselves to prove that his stand was neither for the lust of power nor for any personal gain. It was to safeguard the religion of his grandfather from the clutches of Yazid, who was hell-bent on distorting the real picture of the religion. As far as the real motive behind his uprising against Yazid is concerned, it can never be defined in a better way than the words of Imam himself when he said, "The purpose of my stand is the reformation of my grandfather's nation. I intend to enjoin goodness and forbid evil. I want to emulate my grandfather, the Holy Prophet, and my father, Ali ibn Abi Talib. Peace be upon them."
Hussein al-Gharib al-Gharib al-Hussein, Hussein al-Shahid al-Shahid al-Hussein, Hussein al-Gharib al-Gharib al-Hussein, Hussein al-Shahid al-Shahid al-Hussein.
This is today's special, and I invite you to listen to a short part of a sermon of Imam Sajjad in Kufa. The fourth Imam, Imam Sajjad, addressed the people of Kufa and delivered a sermon before them. After making a sign to them to keep silent, he said, "O people, whoever knows me, and he who does not know me should know that I am the son of that person who was dishonored and whose entire belongings were looted and plundered, and whose women and children were made prisoners. Of course, if the fourth Imam had not mentioned the plundering and maltreatment by the enemy and had not revealed openly the details of the event 1 or 2 days after it had taken place, when the agents of the regime were still jubilant on account of their apparent success and did not know that they had dug their grave with their own hands, it was not unlikely that the matter might have been given a different color in the history of Islam.
The day of Ashura is the day of sacrifice. It's the day of sorrow, pain, suffering, tragedy. But it is also a day of values. If you want to see the religion of Islam summarized in a few hours, look at the day of Ashura. All those religious teachings that Islam brought for us are found in Karbala. The absolute faith in God. Having tawakkul in Allah, you find it in Karbala. The Imam alayhi salam and his companions had this deep faith in God. Despite the danger and the pain, they wholeheartedly submitted themselves to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The values of prayer, the values of honesty, bravery, courage, being self-confident, the value of altruism, of empathy, empathizing with other human beings, you find all of that in Karbala. True love for one another, you find that in Karbala. Many of us for 10, 11, 12 nights, we gather during these first 10 days of Muharram to commemorate the legacy of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And then we say goodbye to Imam Hussein and his message until next year, or maybe until the month of Ramadan comes and we attend again for the nights of Qadr, the nights of power. Imam Hussein alayhi salam wants us to encapsulate his message. These 10 days energize us, refuel us. They give us the proper spiritual dose.
Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahyaya Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa mamati wa mamati wa mamati mamata Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Dear friend, that was all for today's special. May all the praises and thanks be to Allah, to whom belongs all that is in heavens and in the earth. May Allah bless all of you. Be with us for another episode of today's special, inshallah. Thank you and fi amanillah.
You heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio.